dramatic.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. Link it up and take it away. Take it away.
Yeah. Episode 118. What the hell music was that, by the way?
Big O. Opening theme.
Big O.
Except it sounded
that
like
that was
an
anime
like
thing
really
you were talking
bad
about?
80s tape player.
Yeah, it probably was. It was a bad copy.
Sounds like it.
Sounds like Queen.
Yes, it does.
Sounds like Queen. It sounded like Queen coming through an A-track. Anyway, hopefully those of you who have been paying attention, did we post it on the forums yet? We didn't post it on the forums? All right, those of you who aren't paying attention, did we post it on the IRC log?
No, we didn't tell anybody
yet. Here goes the bandwidth.
Oh, boy.
It's not on our end.
It's not on our end. We pushed it up. We put it on the server just for that purpose.
Okay.
We have a real surprise for you guys. The surprise is that we set up a webcam that you guys can
that
look at.
Yeah,
it works intermittently.
Right now it's working only intermittently, but, you know.
We like to think that it works on a regular basis.
Eventually it will. We set up a webcam so that you guys, you know, updates every few seconds or minutes or whatever.
So you guys can see our ugly mugs.
Yeah, so you can check us out, and we'll have that running live while we are doing the show. And you can find that webcam image at Dan.
TLLTS.org/webcam.
TLLTS.org/webcam.
That's right.
And, you know, you get 30 points. Those of you get 30 points who can jump in there right now and tell us who the current picture is.
And, there's also a screenshot images upload section, which you can take advantage of as long as we can, too. So if you want to show us a screenshot, share a screenshot, share a picture.
Share a picture.
Share a goatsy, a tub girl, bottle guy,
no,
if you really want to. You know,
staying away from that.
Don't be
no,
a dick.
No, that's showing up. You know it is.
Don't, you know, it is limited to PNGs, JPEGs, and GIFs of 1 meg or smaller. And that's the way it goes.
Send us your picture.
Now, the for your information, the page will automatically refresh itself every 30 seconds, I believe it is. It'll show you the 7 most recent screenshot images that are uploaded. It'll show you the current picture from the webcam, the last 7 pictures from the webcam, and then we also have little albums that get updated periodically. Like whenever I feel like running it because I didn't put it on a cron job yet.
Yeah.
And it will, you can see all the pictures in the section. The only problem we're having with it is we're using an iSight. And the only application that I found that will work with an iSight is Coriander. And it works pretty good. So I have it running. The scripts work fine. But for some reason, like after 5 minutes of continual use, I start getting distorted images off the camera, and I have to actually shut it down, pull it off, and let it cool down for a couple seconds, put it back on. I don't know why that is. It's pretty weird, but we'll be looking into that. Because I left it on, what was it, the first time I started using it, I was getting perfect captures. I left the room, came back a half hour later, and I was getting all distortion. I thought it was because it was pulling the image over before it was finished writing it.
Right.
And I tried so many different tests, and then finally, I just took one shot, shut the camera off, looked at that picture, and that was still distorted. As soon as I put the camera back on, after I let it off for a couple seconds, actually,
so
it was
just
perfect.
Hit the mouse.
Yeah, here's a dumb question, though. I see you have an air duster right there.
Yeah.
When that thing gets hot and starts distorting again, why don't you hit it with that duster and see if that fixes it? Because that's going to tell you if it really is the camera that's getting hot.
And you know,
because that duster will cool it right down. You know what I mean?
It could be the software,
especially if you turn it upside
down.
It's
a superior Apple product.
I'm betting it's the software that's somehow there's a bit that's not getting to it.
The problem is,
right?
It's you. You're not configuring it properly.
Yeah,
because I'm not using it with Apple.
That's the problem.
Dan,
you need to upgrade your Apple equipment.
Those quality, if you would use the quality Apple products in the manner that they're, you know.
So it's
made for.
There to play around with.
Uncle Steve says you're wrong.
Uncle Steve. And everybody's happy now. Because Link called me. Would you call me up Monday? You're like, was it Sunday? Sunday?
Was it Monday? I think it was. Yeah, it was one of them. Sunday or Monday. And I told him, I said, it would be a really nice idea if we had a webcam and people could, check us out. I was looking at Hack 5. You guys ever watch Hack 5?
Yes.
Really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Every now and then when they're recording a segment, they have a live webcam on. And a couple of times I have actually, when they had the live webcam on, I've gotten into IRC or email or whatever with them and type back and forth. And, they're giving me the wave and stuff like that on their webcam, which I thought was pretty cool. And I figured it would be a really good thing, a neat thing for us to provide for our listeners too. They can get on IRC and say, what color is Alan's underpants tonight? And we can show them, right?
See, Dan wearing no clothes underneath the desk.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that shot! Wait till it refreshes. Who's that?
What do we got?
By the time I get the mouse over there, that limit is it'll refresh on its own.
Oh, it's an alien!
Oh my god!
Hi, Pat.
Yes, it's fresh.
Honey,
half my face.
Oh yeah, and there's an image uploaded by. One of the things I need to do is work on getting correct aspect ratios when I resize the thumbnails for the screenshot images. Because sometimes, but if you click on any one of those images, it'll open it up. A fuller size, or the original image size, in a separate window.
That'll work just fine.
But,
right?
Suck it up. It was a couple hours of figuring out how to code all that stuff and getting the right software and realizing that some of the stuff in PHP 5 doesn't work in PHP 4.
Yeah, no kidding.
So when you're reading a book and trying to do PHP 5,
funny.
And then you gotta go, like, what the hell? And then it's like, oh, gotta go look up the PHP 4 way of doing it.
Yes, sir.
Oh. Yes.
That's funny.
Now, I guess I will try and give Mr. Watson a call.
Yeah, let's call John.
Bad news. A lot of bad news this week.
No kidding.
A lot of crappy news. Wait, we're...
People having problems.
You know what? One thing, can I just jump in real quick while you're trying to connect with John? I was listening to last week's episode. Dan was pretty drunk by the end of the episode.
Dude, I had... Like,
yes,
after you guys left, I had another beer. I was like on my fifth beer. I was like, my head was like,
and they're not; those weren't piss water beers.
No.
Those were strong beers.
I woke up the next morning with such a hangover. I was like, I just can't. I don't want
to
go to
work.
I was like, I should just stay home. I don't want to go to work. And I went to work anyhow. But yeah, that was three too many beers last week.
Three too many beers before you started. Last
too many beers. Yeah. Let me see if I can actually get a hold of him. He's got his like. I'm showing John. Oh!
One new event.
Here we go. Hold on. We're gonna try and get a hold
Ring-a-dingy,
of John.
Ring a dingy, Skype.
Ring a dingaling.
Hope it doesn't blow out our eardrums.
Hopefully it'll connect. I had a problem last time. Oh, look at that. Hello.
Oh boy.
It's not good when it keeps ringing.
No.
Not good at all. Oh, I'm getting his greeting.
Hey, John. Hey. Hello.
I got it. And I don't know what the heck's up with Skype and Ubuntu, but it's...
spazzing out?
Well, if some reason it doesn't release the audio device properly. I don't know why. And I got to shut it down and bring it back up.
What a pain in the ass that is.
Yeah. I got to.
John just said on IRC that he put a picture of his face in Kelly's breast on a thing.
Really?
I didn't see that.
His face on Alan's breast.
Squeezing his man boobs.
Hot John. There'll be a hot John soon.
There you go.
First there was hot wing. Now there was hot John.
John says he's going to call us.
All right, I'll let him call us.
All right, John, call us.
I'll let it explode.
Yeah, Dan was really hammered, man. You could tell because he was slurring his words at the end.
Oh, yeah, it was getting pretty bad.
He was slurring his words. He was practically falling over the keyboard. Yeah.
He couldn't have, like, a coherent thought.
I know.
He'd start something and, like, quickly just stop.
Good thing I wasn't driving. I had the fat finger keyboard going on there when I was trying to do the notes for the show. I was like, boy, everything was numb, and you're trying to type, and nothing works.
Sounds like a good old Irish podcast going on.
What is that, Irish funeral?
Yeah, Irish wake.
Oh, Irish wedding.
Irish wake, man. That's the way they do them. It's the way that we do them in my family. Everybody shows up to the funeral.
Have fun.
Yeah, everybody shows up at the funeral, and they do their thing there for, 15, 20 minutes, and then they all head to the bar. And that's where the real grieving happens.
Now, other bad news this week. The U.S. Patent Office has started the final approval of the Microsoft patent on the VFAT technology.
Yes, it is.
Which is not a good thing. Not a good thing at all. And that's going to, from what I understand, what it can impact if it were to be approved is impact with
everything.
It'll impact everything. On the Linux side of things, it might make it that you'd have to remove VFAT compatibility out of the kernel because you can't pay the royalties or have something like that in the kernel.
And not necessarily, because we can reverse engineer it.
It could be reverse engineered, I guess. But that then would make equipment manufacturers, particularly with cameras, have to pay a 25-cent per device royalty fee to Microsoft, capped at, $250,000? Which, when you think about it, it's kind
of a bargain.
It's a drop in the bucket. It's a bargain. It's a drop in the bucket because, all they do is just... I don't think it's going to be a one-to-one ratio, but they
What's the bargain?
They tack the price onto the consumer.
What's the bargain for me?
They tack the price...
We're having problems with our webcam.
Tack the price onto the product so the consumer actually pays for it.
I thought John was going to call it.
It is trippy.
Well, hopefully if the manufacturers have any common sense to them, they'll go and convert
John?
It to EXT2
John
or EXT3.
But see, the thing is, really, it's not that much of an expense to the manufacturers.
Right.
Like, Apple's not going to care.
Probably not.
Olympus, they make cameras. They're not going to care.
There is
care.
No
Nokia.
Expense.
Really, because it's just going to pass it on to the consumer. Now, the consumer probably isn't going to give a damn because most of the people don't really care. They won't care. Who cares whether it can't be read by Linux? Apple will still be able to. Microsoft will still be able to. But you're paying twice.
There he is.
You're paying twice for the capability of using that same technology. John.
Hey, we did it.
How you doing?
About time.
you think Skype on Ubuntu sucks right on Linspire?
Still running Linspire, are you?
I can't give up Suspend. That's it, I'm hooked.
You got to switch to Vista, man, when it comes out.
Vista?
Yeah, that has a lot of Suspend.
It's been suspended now for like 4 years, right?
Yeah, exactly. Nice show, 116, by the way. Yeah, nicely done.
Thank you.
Thanks for sending that email.
That was beautiful. Yeah.
That's what killed your show, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody else heard it and said, you know what? These Linux guys, we just got to like outlaw that shit right now.
Kill them dead.
So what the hell happened, man?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Here's the deal. I want to make sure that, the story out there isn't that we went to work one day, business as normal, and we were locked out. Like, Kelly and I had already decided and already spoken with Cam from the podcast network that the format of the show was basically taking too much time for us to do well. So we were already going to revamp it, still be heavily Linux-related, but kind of give Kelly a little more airtime. And we gave Cam the opportunity to, take that show or host that show or whatever. and he turned it down, which is fine. You know, he says we don't do couple shows, which is probably a good decision considering they're running a business over there, right? With me?
Yep, we're still here.
No listening. Couple casts.
We're riveted.
No couple casts. We're riveted.
Well,
sure you are.
Well, what if you have two guys on or two women?
Well, I don't know how Matt Freak and the Fat Boy feel about that, but, you know, that's one of their podcasts.
To be honest, John, I don't think I listened to any of the other shows that were on there.
So, show 29 we did. We sent it in, as per normal, uploaded the files and sent it in an email so they can vet it and make it live. And in that email, I said, yeah, this is the final decision. We are going to move on. Here's 29. We're going to do show 30 and then cut loose and do our own show. And his response was just to lock us out of the block entirely. So, of course, I freaked. You know, wouldn't you?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Cardinals was not sending me an email, right? Like, he just locked out of the block. I discovered it the next morning. We're still locked out. We're never getting back in. And about a day later, he goes, oh, well, that's standard procedure when I was resigned. I didn't know you'd be upset about it or anything. And basically, that's where everything kind of blew up and where it fell down.
No. Don't give us a chance to upload our last two shows, and we wouldn't expect you to be upset about that. Here's what I don't understand, John.
Well, that's the filter, man, is it? I mean...
Go ahead.
You can break it bad.
Go ahead.
Skype sucks.
Yeah, Skype is bad.
Okay, I think I got you now.
Here's what I don't understand. Is the podcast network, is that actually the entity responsible for creating the your old podcast? Like, was that their idea, and then you just came along and said, yeah, we'll do that? Or was that your idea, and they said, we'll host it there?
That was our idea. We came up and said, hey, you know.
Okay, that's what I figured. It was your idea. Yeah. And what really peeved me was... After I saw all of this going down, I got I had RSS feed from the podcast network, right. And immediately what I saw after I heard all of this was the podcast network's RSS feed saying, "Hey, John and Kelly decided not to do this anymore, so we're looking for somebody else to do." Linux podcast on there, and I was like, that's a pretty raw thing. Like, lock them out of their stuff so they can't upload it and then steal their show. You know? I was like, they're stealing their damn show. It's not even the podcast network's freaking show.
Yeah, I was wondering how they could actually do
that.
What
the hell is that, you know?
Well, I don't think they could, you know, like, if we wanted to carry on and do the GNU/Linux users show, really... At least two of those names are trademarked elsewhere, or copyrighted elsewhere or whatever. So it's not like they could come after us for keeping that name. But in context, back when we started the show last, I don't know, June or whatever it was, there wasn't a lot of places to host podcasts that you could afford. Like, Libsyn was just getting started, but they were shaky, and that was really the only deal going. So there was an incentive to get involved with a network, because if you were successful, there's no way you could afford to host your own crap, unless you're running your own box, which a lot of us don't do. So there was incentive back then. Now there's not, because Libsyn is nice and solid, and, you know, I can run our numbers off Libsyn for $10 a month. So there's really no incentive to be part of a network anymore. But back then, that was a trade-off, right? They'd give you all this shit, and in exchange, you'd do the show for them.
Now, did you sign a contract, like you had to do a show every week no matter what?
Yeah, and here's the part I don't understand, right? There is a contract, and, yeah, it's supposed to be a weekly show, but, you know, they're a little loosey-goosey on it. They know people have real lives. But in this contract, there's a 30-day out clause for either party. So the part of that I can't figure out is how it could be standard procedure to lock me out of the blog if there's the 30-day out policy on both sides. That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Now, were you guys getting paid for this or no?
Wow. Over, you know, the Motorola sponsorship, I'm sure you guys heard the Motorola ads on the show for a while.
Yeah, it's all over the homepage, too.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was the Motorola GNU/Linux user show.
No, so The official answer is yes. We made $107 off that. So, you know, I don't know.
$107 Canadian.
$107 total?
Canadian, that's right. It's $4 you got. Yeah.
You know what, man? You're better off just doing your own thing.
So, yeah, I mean, do we get paid for it? Sure. But, you know. Well, and that's the thing. And, you know, we knew intellectually, like, well, we're not really in control of our own stuff here, right? You know, they host all the stuff, and they really own the show, and they can kind of do whatever they want. And that was part of the reason why we decided that it was time to move on, because we're having a lot of fun doing this, but not in that format. And also, there's starting to be some value to it. Like, you guys know, you got 118 shows up there. Like, that's an awful lot of work that you don't want to lose.
Right.
And that we've effectively lost. Like, yeah, we can link to it, but, I mean, you know, and I've got copies of it, but, you know, that's all Podcast Network stuff now. So that's part of the moving on to kind of get control of our own stuff. So that means starting over with a new show, but whatever, that's what it means, you know.
That really sucks. Now, you said in your contract, your shows that you produce become their shows. How does that then relate to the Creative Commons licensing? Or wasn't it?
Does TPN have Creative Commons in common?
I don't know. Was your show released under Creative Commons license?
I have no idea. My show is uploaded to them, and they do whatever they do with it.
Yeah, they did do whatever they wanted.
They did.
You're right.
I think the only good thing about this whole experience is that now you guys know better, and you didn't let it go on any longer than it had. But
at the end of the day, we're just pissed that I mean, our shittiest show has like 2,000 listeners, and I know maybe 20 of them, you know, that stop by my blog and talk to me on Skype and stuff like that. So, I mean, the rest of them are going to have no idea. It's just all of a sudden the feed's dead for a couple months, and all of a sudden there's a new guy doing the show. And that's what really irritates us.
Hopefully you plugged our show enough during your show that they'll hear it off of our show and keep listening to you, so...
Yeah, hopefully word will get around anyhow, because the next iteration is still going to be heavily Linux-oriented, just... Kelly's going to have, you know, her own part, which probably won't be Linux-oriented.
That really stinks, man.
Yeah, well, thanks. It was kind of a big surprise. It was especially brutal because we had, I thought we had such a good relationship, too, and all of a sudden, boom, it was over, and it was just like, wow, it was quite a shock.
Apparently, according to the TPN, it's all released under the Creative Commons license, unless otherwise stated.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see any otherwise stated on your show.
Which is it? What, share alike or what? What
you can license? Do whatever you want with
do
it.
Do whatever you want with. So, you know, by all means, grab your episodes and you know, make them available.
After tonight's show, there'll be this is not released under the Creative Commons license on the TPN show.
Well, there's no. I mean, like I said, I could link to them. I've got my own copies. I mean, I don't really know what it means. You know, if they want to claim ownership of it. In practicality, I don't really know what that means. Like, I can't put a best of show together or something. Like, I don't know. I have no idea.
It's Creative Commons, man. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yep.
Sweet. Dave, it's your show. It's your words.
Yeah. See, they're business people, though, right? They're all, you know, they think differently than everybody else.
And then they'll do that, and they'll get sued, and we'll be like, you know what? John deserved it. He violated the contract. Stupid.
Totally bad.
All right, John, so here's a dumb question for you, right?
Okay, go.
I'm sure that you have you seen a program called The Mythbusters?
That's a cool show.
No.
You haven't seen The Mythbusters?
It's on a History Channel.
You gotta get that.
Oh,
actually, no,
man.
It's on TLC, right?
It's on
Discovery?
It's on, like,
I
Discovery.
It's on tonight, and I forgot to record it.
Discovery All right, the Mythbusters, it's a show here in the United States, right?
Yeah.
Where they... These two guys that are ex special effects guys for Hollywood.
I think they still do it.
They go through and they debunk all these different myths, like any kind of myth you can think of. Okay, and the reason that I mention it is because their last commercial that they have on that they've been replaying over and over and over again features Bigfoot. Okay, and Bigfoot is talking about how depressed he is and how scared. because these Mythbuster guys are busting all these myths, and he thinks that he's next, okay?
Okay.
And the reason that it was so funny, and you brought it to mind, is because at the very end of the commercial, Bigfoot says, perhaps it is because I'm Canadian.
He's got a French accent.
That they're coming after him. And I just think that's it's the funniest damn thing. I get such a giggle over it, and I wanted
it's
to know if
because I am Canadian.
Yeah, it's because I'm Canadian. It was really fun. I guess you had to be there, but...
That's class. I love how the rest of the world thinks all Canadians speak French.
I know. It was so
this
funny.
One province, which is admittedly, you know, pretty populous, but still it's one province that speaks French.
But I just wanted to know if you saw it and you thought it was as funny as I did, because I was absolutely rolling the first time I saw it. Bigfoot, and he's speaking French-Canadian, you know?
I love the tractor-trailer crash they did.
Oh, yeah.
Because that reminded me of, like, driving to work.
I was watching That 70s Show the other day, mm-hmm. and they were going to Van Stock or something like that, and... They didn't want Jackie to go, and Jackie showed up. She was going to go, and Eric said something like, oh, you don't want to go. There's going to be lots of Canadians there. She goes, ooh, and she runs away. What did we do?
I have no clue.
Me either.
Anyway, so what's the name of the new show going to be?
Well, I don't know. It was going to be Jack Attack, J-A-K for John and Kelly, right? But then I didn't Google it first, and somebody's already taking Jack Attack at some record company somewhere. So now I don't know.
That's okay. I found another Linux link. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Nope.
There's a linuxlink.com.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's some company that does Linux, like, I don't know, it's educational
it was a
videos
while ago.
Or something.
Are they respectable, at least?
I don't know. I never really looked into them that
well,
much.
Well, John, let us know what you're doing. You know, keep us in the loop, you know?
Absolutely. If anybody wants to know, pay attention to johnwatson.ca and, you know, whatever. We know what we're doing. It's probably going to bust loose at the end of next week. But there's just some little details we've got to sort out. But we'll be posting the information on there.
Yeah, well, make sure you let us know. And, you know, stop on the show here occasionally, too. We love to have you on. So
I know. You guys are great supporters. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you having me on tonight to kind of help, you know, whatever, air my side of it and maybe let people know what's going on and that there will be some kind of continuation.
No problem. Good to have you.
Come on anytime.
Roger.
Best of luck, man.
All right, take care, guys.
Take it easy, John.
See you, John.
Happy holidays.
Holidays are
belated.
All
perhaps it is because he's Canadian.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. Maybe he's like Eastern Orthodox or something.
Right. Talk to you later, John.
Ciao, guys.
The Christmas is late, isn't it, Eastern Orthodox?
Yeah, it was just yesterday or the other day, right? Yeah.
Now, is our guest calling us tonight?
He's jumping on the conference room.
I better get over there.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea.
Dun, dun, dun.
Jumping on the conference room, making sure we can actually
Jeff
get
Wade.
There.
You are currently the
good.
Only person in
hope
this
hope he didn't
conference.
Come in.
Hello.
All right. Just keep on keeping on until it's time to not keep on anymore. Yeah, the camera doesn't work out well when you hold it.
It's too hot?
No. I mean, I think there's a little jitteriness and the captures come out a little fuzzy. So.
Well, that sucks, man.
What?
I guess, you know, anytime you sign a contract, man, you better freaking make sure that it's ironclad. Even if it is ironclad.
Something, yeah.
You can still get screwed over, man. You know, I posted on John's blog. I told him a story that, you know, I worked in companies where somebody gets fired. They sent security over. They got the security guard standing there watching
you
when you empty out your cubicle.
Yeah, I work in one like that.
That sucks, man. It like kind of implies that, you know, the person did something criminally wrong. Or
yeah,
something.
They'll send several security guards over to stand around
and
while
they
hand you boxes.
Out.
Yeah, they hand you the boxes while you fill them up.
That's horrible.
Yeah, but you gotta have style when you do it, like. What you do is you fill up the boxes and you start handing them to the security guards, you know?
Well, actually...
My car is the third blue one out there in this... Yeah.
Well, actually, they do sort of help.
Tip them on the way out.
They're not all, you know, it's not like, you know, the gunned, you know, dress in blue security guards that you see in a lot of places.
The rent-a-cops?
Yeah. Yeah, these are normal people that just happen to wander around
our guest is on.
The building every hour or so hitting the little...
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello?
This is...
This is the Linux Link Tech Show?
Yes, it is.
We're calling from HP.
And we're waiting for you. Yep. You got the right place.
All right.
Just want to let you know, we are live right now, so when you do come on, you're actually speaking live.
Yep, you're. This is the live. This is the thing. You are here on the Linux Link Tech Show. Who are we speaking with, by the way?
This is Jeff Wade from HP. Jeff, welcome.
How are you guys doing this evening?
All right, Jeff. How about yourself?
Very good, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you great.
All right. So why don't we go ahead and get started?
All right. Take it away, Pat.
Jeff, welcome to the show. You know, HP is making a lot of money doing Linux and open source. What are some of the applications and products that you guys are into?
Patrick, I'm having a little trouble hearing you. You seem to be breaking up on me for some reason.
Okay. What Pat was starting off with is he said that HP is making a lot of inroads in open source and Linux products and stuff, and he wanted to know what projects you guys are currently working on with regards to Linux.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you know, but we currently ship several products today, over 200 products today that contain various amounts of open source software, some including Linux. We also do a program called HP Linux Reference Architectures. And what's exciting about that is we do the integration work for the customers to make sure the different solution components work well together. So if you're thinking about sort of a solution stack, and we've got, of course, we have Integrity servers and ProLiant servers and Blade servers, and you have Linux running on those, and then you can add things like manageability with OpenView and Systems Insight Manager, and then you have things like high availability, like HP Service Guard for Linux, and then on top of that, you start using your middleware applications. We started this program about 2 years ago, and actually we were the first vendor to go out there and do that. And it started with commercial solutions like things from Oracle and BEA. And about a year later, we became the first vendor to start offering open source solutions like JBoss and MySQL, Apache, and things like that. So this allowed customers for the first time to start looking at building solutions that were already tested and integrated and that could be supported by a single vendor. So sometimes with this new technology, customers are a little more comfortable when they can go to a single vendor for the support for the whole stack. And so we've been pretty excited about offering that kind of solution to our customers today. We also give customers some choice with things like offering Red Hat Linux as well as Novell SUSE Linux. We support these kinds of solutions and Linux operating systems across our complete range of server platforms, as I mentioned earlier, Integrity servers, ProLiant servers, and HP Blade servers.
Now, you've seen a lot of sales on Linux servers and Linux solutions?
Yes, in fact, we were the first vendor to ship over 1 million Linux servers. And some of the market share information that we get to look at, there's different firms that study the marketplace. And we consistently rank number one in Linux server units. So that would be the number of servers that we ship into this environment and sell into this environment, Linux environment. And then number one for factory revenues for Linux across ProLiant and Integrity servers. So we're pretty excited. We lead in the marketplace, and we try to develop programs like the Linux Reference Architectures so that we can continue to grow our lead in the marketplace.
So what do you think is the greatest market opportunities are for Linux-based products and services?
Okay, that's a good question. We've seen a lot of uptake for Linux and infrastructure and edge of the network applications. And we've seen that really grow quite strongly over the last several years. In fact, today, if you have a customer that's just starting to get involved in Linux, the infrastructure edge of the network still is a really great place to get started. It allows you to see how well it's going to work in your environment, to see if you have the right resources to help support the environments within your organization, and it's just a real easy place to get started. What we've seen happen more recently is the adoption of more middleware-type applications in the space. And that's really helped us respond to that need by offering the reference architecture program I mentioned earlier. And we sort of keep a pulse on the marketplace to see, you know, over time where we need to expand that and keep an eye on the application space. You know, you probably heard of things like Sugar CRM and Vista MedSphere, things like that. So we're just kind of keeping an eye on how that continues to develop and whether we need to start integrating those kinds of solutions into a stack that we can support for customers.
So now, could you give us a few examples of what solutions customers have been coming to you with? Like, what are they actually wanting to implement? Is it mostly web services or, file and print services? What type of services are they coming to you for?
Absolutely. So those are some of the alternatives. You know, when we think about edge of the network or infrastructure, it includes file and print. It includes things like firewalls, DNS servers, DHCP, all kinds of applications like that. So we see that as a pretty common way to. Firewalls is another one. In fact, if we look at the way HP uses Linux and open source software in our own IT environment, you'll see a lot of that use being in the infrastructure space. We do things like secure instant messaging with Jabber. We route all of our incoming emails through Linux-based servers. We manage our wireless network with Linux-based tools. We run Oracle 9 Iraq on Linux servers. We have groups that do their design work and development work on Linux-based high-performance technical compute clusters. So we use it a lot in very similar ways that we see our customers using it today as well. And what's interesting about that is that we get to experience the problems that customers may encounter. And based on our own practical experience and learning to work with these environments, we're able to better help customers that want to deploy those same kinds of solutions in their environment. Now, on top of that, what we see a lot more happening is application servers, database, and things like that. Remember, we talked about the middleware layer. So that has started to come on pretty strong over the last year or so.
So that being the case, do you have a large or sizable desktop deployment within HP itself? Is that what you guys are using for your day-to-day tasks and activities in any of your departments?
Well, actually, and that's an interesting question. We get that a lot about the client side. HP, about a year and a half ago, became Novell's first partner to really go off and certify the Novell Linux desktop across a lot of our different platforms. What we're seeing in the marketplace today, though, is that Linux on the desktop is still really an emerging opportunity, where over the last, 5 years or so, we've seen some great uptake on the server side. The desktop or the client side still continues to be more of an emerging opportunity. We're really positioned well because we have a lot of platforms, laptops, desktops, workstations that are certified for both Novell and Red Hat. We have more certified with Novell simply because, we got started with them a lot sooner. So we have more platforms. If you go out to our website, it's at hp.com/go/Linux. And out there we keep matrices of all of our different products across our product line, so you can see exactly what's tested and supported in these different Linux environments. But like I said, the client side is still more of an emerging opportunity, and we're just kind of positioned with choices for customers that would allow them to get into that. We see this sort of in, we do ship these clients around the world. We ship several hundred thousand every quarter, and the majority of that goes to Asia Pacific. There's probably half of our volume goes to Asia Pacific. about 35% of that volume goes to EMEA, which is Europe and Middle East, Africa. And then the smaller portion of that, I'd say like around 15%, ends up coming to the Americas, which would be Canada, United States, and South America. The environments tend to be situations where you're not so dependent on compatibility with Microsoft Office applications. So like a call center environment where you're using web-based applications, it's a really ideal situation to, you know, deploy these kinds of solutions.
So you're seeing more of a Linux adoption on a desktop overseas than right now in the United States.
Yes, that's true. And if you look at sort of historically, overseas, we've always seen higher adoptions of operating systems like Unix compared to Windows. So there's more of a willingness to try that new technology overseas than here in the Americas. Some of that has to do with governments wanting to also exploit more open source technologies in their environments. And so we see more requests from the government sector, public sector, also wanting to have information about what we support in the Linux and open source space.
So are you using that technology in-house?
We do have a population of desktop users inside of HP that do use Linux on their desktop, and it's around 5,000 users or so. And it really reflects sort of the ratios we see in the marketplace. A couple years ago, we were looking at the desktop market share, and Windows really has the lead, the top space in there. We estimate around, by any number of different measures, so like 96%, 97% of the marketplace. And there's sort of a toss-up between whether Linux on the desktop or the Mac OS is in the number two spot. But you have to remember there's a huge, huge gap between the number one spot and the number two spot, which whether that ends up being Linux or the Mac operating system. So we figure that's around 2 to 3%. So there's still quite a gap between the first place Windows operating system for desktops and what we might think would be happening with Linux.
Then again, that number is only a predicted number for the United States and not for other countries.
Right. But the numbers I'm talking about, though, are really sort of a worldwide market share percentage. So when we look at the worldwide marketplace, it's still a huge, huge lead with Microsoft Windows on the client side. And then in a very distant second place would be the Linux operating system. We see a lot of, like I mentioned earlier, a lot more uptake with Linux on servers than we do on the client side. And some of that makes sense when you start trying to understand the customers that use the technology. We've seen a lot of customers come from a low-end Unix environment, say like Solaris, and migrating either functionality, edge of the network functionality, to Linux on a industry standard platform like a ProLiant server, and or migrating some of their applications from a Solaris environment to a Linux environment. And the folks that get involved in that, the Linux environment is much more similar to Unix than Windows. So there's not a lot of retraining of resources. It's easier to deploy your internal folks that are either supporting that environment or developing applications for that environment to really embrace Linux. And customers tell us when they start moving away from RISC-based platforms like Spark, for example, to a ProLiant server, there's just a tremendous difference in the value proposition in going to a standards-based platform. So that's what we see sort of driving that market.
So what you're saying is desktop Linux, we've still got a long way to go.
Yeah, we would categorize that as still an emerging opportunity. And we continue to work with both Novell and Red Hat to make sure that there's a variety of platforms certified in that environment for customers to that want to go off and do that. They certainly can use a platform that we know is tested and certified and supported.
See, now that's a very interesting observation that you have there. And Dan and I have been doing this Linux stuff for a very long time now, and maybe 4 or 5 years ago we were sitting down and talking about how the industry standard for servers at that point in time everybody said was Microsoft, and that exactly what you said about the desktops, that Linux was an emerging technology for that, and now Linux has a very, very large share of servers. So being that if you follow that trend, in another couple of years or so, Linux is going to make another big inroads attempt into the desktop market. At least that's what we believe, as people become more familiar with it. And what we want to know is if HP as a company is poised to take advantage of that market by providing really good Linux support for those people who want to use it. Like, we want Linux-based laptops. So we want Linux on the desktop. We want them right from HP, pre-installed.
Right.
We're looking for HP drivers that for all your HP products that run under Linux. That kind of thing. That's what we're excited to see.
Well, let's talk about that for just a couple of minutes, because really, you know, when we look at any marketplace, whether it's Windows or Unix or Linux, and I'm going to talk specifically about Linux, the things we try to do is to look at how we can provide customers choice, and that's like it could be, you know, choice of Red Hat or Novell. It could be choice of a 32-bit or 64-bit platform. It could be a choice of Blade servers, rack servers, tower servers, workstations, desktop, laptops. So that's how we look at that element of how we provide choice to our customers. So we give them a lot of flexibility by supporting a pretty large portfolio of products that support this environment. Now, when we talk about integrated solutions, you know, I mentioned earlier about the Linux reference architecture. So, you know, one of the things that we hear back from customers is wanting to know what works in this environment, who's putting the pieces together, and who's trying to provide that support. And those are some of the things that we address. Those concerns we can address with a program like Linux Reference Architectures.
Mm-hmm.
And then giving customers confidence. So this is around where they can go to find support, having a vendor like HP stand behind the products with any number of support offerings, device drivers. In fact, when we talk about that, we look at things like printers, for example. Today we have over 300 open source printer drivers available for all of our different kinds of printers. And in fact, today when we introduce a new printer product, in fact, last year we introduced these new printers that could print a 4x6 picture in 14 seconds or less. And when that printer was made available, there was a Linux driver for it as well. So we're very committed to making sure that our products are supported in all these different environments, whether it's Windows, Unix, or Linux. And we think we do a pretty good job. And those things we can always do better. But we look at some of the resources. You know, I said we have over 300 printer drivers. We have over 150 to 200 products that ship with open source or Linux software in them. Just to give you an example, we have print servers that have that software in them. Our projectors run open source software. HP Systems Insight Manager uses open source software. So we really look at not only how do we support these environments for our customers, but how do we embrace this technology to help build solutions, help build products that, you know, customers can deploy in their environments. And I think another thing that's really interesting is how HP uses these same technologies that our customers do in our own IT environment to run our own businesses.
What about multifunction devices? Has that been difficult to get actual Linux support for a lot of the multifunction devices?
Absolutely. In fact, if you go, there's a SourceForge site, and I'm just looking for, but there's a location. It's sourceforge.net/projects/HP Inkjet. And when I mentioned those 300 drivers, that includes all the multifunction printers as well as inkjet, laserjet, and things like that. So the full portfolio of printers you'd be able to plug into your, like your Linux desktop, and get the functionality that you'd expect to see in, say, like a Windows environment.
Okay, so if we were to go to HP's website and wanted to, if we had a multifunction device like the PSC-1510, and we went to the software drivers and downloads, I mean, we don't see any mention of there being any Linux support on there. Would that mean that there's no SourceForge drivers for it? Or is it kind of like hit and miss that maybe the product's supported, or maybe it isn't?
No, we keep all those drivers consolidated on an open source site. So there's a couple ways to get to it. That one link that I mentioned earlier is one way to get there.
Can you repeat that link again?
And also on opensource.hp.com, we have another way to get to those types of printer drivers as well.
Yeah, can you repeat that link again, the one that you originally had said?
Okay. It's sourceforge.net.
Yep.
/projects.
Yep.
/HP Inkjet.
And those are the two best places to go for resources regarding...
You'll see a huge collection of drivers that we've made open source and available.
Here's a quick question for you. Do you feel or do you think that as a company that HP's price point has been made better through the use of like open source technologies and using open source software and things like that? Have you made your price point better?
Yes, absolutely. And I'll give you a couple of examples. If there's technology out there that we can utilize rather than having to develop, then that saves us money, and we can pass those savings to customers. One example is our Linux-based Thin client. We're able to offer that at a lower price point because of the open source software that's the operating system on the Thin client. And it really gives us some flexibility there. And when you look at a device like that, you know, a Thin client is accessing applications from another back-end server. So for an end user, you know, they have exactly the same experience, whether that is, you know, running an open source operating system or not. And so it just gives us a little more flexibility in how we can price products like that, because the costs end up being a little bit lower.
Now, do you find that happens a lot, that you get to take advantage of open source projects as they're being developed and stuff?
Yes, and in fact, we have our own website where we have made open source technology from HP available. And that was that site I mentioned at opensource.hp.com. And out there, we have a listing of a variety of different projects, some that have dedicated HP engineers associated with them, so that if you had, you know, questions or comments, or you want to make a suggestion for a change, there's somebody associated with that project that you can actually contact. The whole reason we look at different technologies we can contribute is that there's a thought that we can help make this environment mature faster.
Mm-hmm.
And the quicker it does mature, the faster it can, the easier it can be adopted by companies to, you know, help run solutions and meet their business needs.
That's good.
What about one of the Linux solutions that sounds really interesting is the HP 441, the 4-in-1 computer solution with Mandrake Linux installed?
Yes.
Obviously that's been moved over to Mandriva now, yes?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting about that project, because you think about it, it's really very much like Unix technology, where you have the terminals attached to a main CPU. And what's interesting about that is Linux sort of lets you reintroduce technologies that had been existing for a while and put a fresh face on them and help address particular needs that customers have in these kinds of environments.
Has that been a pretty popular project?
No, it hasn't really been, and we actually have discontinued that particular project. But we're always looking at new ways we can deploy technologies and utilize open source technology to help build solutions.
One of the big buzzwords today, when we're talking about Linux adoption in the corporation, or even Linux adoption at home or in the education environment, and one of the big buzzwords that they're coming up with these days is called is integration. I hear a lot of going about today that Microsoft is kind of swaying people from adopting or switching to a Linux platform, and one of their main points is that if you stay with a Microsoft platform, you have so much better integration at a far cheaper cost. Whereas to get the same level of integration in Linux, it would cost you a considerable amount of money and development time. In your opinion, there's probably some validity to that argument, but is it really something that Linux is very deficient in?
There's a whole bunch of different studies out in the marketplace, and they look at the total cost of ownership and different aspects of these different environments. I would argue that, and we hear this from customers, and we can see it in the market numbers today, that Linux is a mainstream operating system. We've talked already about where we see a much stronger adoption on the server side, but it is mainstream, and it really boils down to what customers want to do, what applications that they're trying to deploy, what applications are available, what operating systems run on what platforms. And so these are the same questions that we've always had to answer when we've been building solutions for customers. Linux just gives us another tool to help us build these solutions. And I would argue that in the marketplace we see today, and the growth rates that we see of the different operating systems in the market, that Linux is very successful. One of the reasons that we are so focused on it is that it does project to have a very strong growth rate over the next 5 to 7 years. And so for a company like ourselves, they're looking for new opportunities to sell to customers. It is a big focus for us, and we are very proud of the success that we've had in that marketplace. Now, another question you could probably ask yourselves, is there any one technology that's ever going to dominate the marketplace? And I would offer that answer is no. And we've seen that with predictions with Unix, we've seen that with predictions of Windows, and I would offer that even Linux is not going to dominate the marketplace. We have a program inside of HP called Adaptive Enterprise. And what that does is it recognizes that very fact that customers' environments are always going to be heterogeneous. So as a company, we've made a decision to support customers in whatever technologies make sense to solve their solutions. That includes Linux, it includes Windows, and it includes Unix. And we support these operating systems across, this very broad portfolio of products that are all driving towards standards-based technologies. Now, you probably saw some announcements from us over the last several years where we were moving from PA RISC to Itanium. More recently, where we've been moving our nonstop servers from MIPS to Itanium. So we've made a big conscious decision inside of our company to move to standards technology. And we also embrace the fact that customers are always going to be using different technologies to build their solutions that are always going to result in heterogeneous environments. So for us, Linux and open source technology just happens to be another tool in the toolbox that gives us the opportunity to build solutions for customers. And I think the thing that really sets HP apart is that we it's not about, you know, replacing Windows or Unix with Linux, but how do we integrate Linux into those environments to build the right solution for customers?
I got to challenge you on something there. You said no one company dominates the market, but yet we hear time and time again that Microsoft dominates the desktop market. Now, maybe long-term that won't be the case, and long-term being like 10 years or so. But wouldn't you think, would you agree with the fact that, yes, Microsoft does dominate the desktop market, therefore that controls
what's available?
The
market information we can look at today, when we look at market share for desktops, really bears that out. You know, their market share today is in the high 90% for the desktop worldwide. And I would say that we see that trend continuing for quite some time.
Right, but that's what I mean. You had mentioned before that there isn't one, you know, nobody dominates the marketplace, but yet Microsoft is dominating the marketplace.
Right. Well, you know, my earlier comments are really sort of the back-end server side.
Right.
And, But on the client side, there are alternatives. You know, there's the platforms with Mac OS. There's certainly a number of customers around the world that do use Linux on the desktop. We have a population inside of HP that's very dedicated to using Linux on the desktop as well. But just looking at the sheer numbers, you know, they are definitely in first place. Doesn't mean that they're the only solution out there, but they certainly are the dominant solution.
On a different topic for just a second, I know that myself, along with, I'm assuming at least some of our other listeners, I'm an old Unix hack, and I really wanted you to take a brief minute to comment about your HP UX software and operating system, and to see what kind of things you're doing with that lately and how that's going. I'm interested to know.
Okay. Well, remember I mentioned the adaptive enterprise, which where we embrace the multi-OS strategy. So we still do a tremendous amount of business with the Unix operating system. If we look at, I talked earlier about the growth rates of the different operating systems. Well, we do see Windows and Linux having the fastest growth rate. But when we look at revenues, for example, as a company, we generate more revenues from Unix and Windows than we do from Linux. But the reason we're so focused on Linux is that it does have a trajectory that would imply that it's going to continue to grow over time. So we want to make sure that we're very focused on new opportunities. How this complements what we do with HP UX, that tends to be it's a very powerful operating system. It tends to be at the higher solutions. If we look at sort of the different types of solutions, low-end Unix, mid-range Unix, high-end Unix, I would rank HP UX at the mid and the high range, which is very complementary to where we sell Linux today, which tends to be more at the lower end. You know, for a long time, HP, IBM, Compaq Digital in the old digital days were very envious of Sun's position in the low-end space. I mean, they really had the infrastructure market wrapped up very, very tight. And if you think back to the dot-com boom days, I mean, Sun was advertising that they were the dot and the dot-com, and, you know, they were just the king of the hill. Now, you know, HP, IBM, Digital, Compaq, we just never could make the inroads that Sun did. But when that all turned, that marketplace turned around, when the dot-com phenomenon sort of busted, it also made Sun very vulnerable in their market position. And this is really where we've seen the greatest opportunity for HP in getting new opportunities that we never would have gotten with, say, a ProLiant server, for example, with Windows. Now, we do have some success in helping customers migrate from Unix to Windows, but we've had a great deal of easier and more success in helping those same customers migrate from, say, like a Solaris environment to a Linux environment on a ProLiant server. So it's been a tremendous opportunity for us to see new and incremental sales for our different platforms.
So what kind of new inroads are we going to be able to see with your with the HP UX operating system? I really like HP UX. I've been using it for a long, long time, and I know they have 11i out now, and I you know, that's the best one ever. I keep expecting it to be better and better, and waiting for newer and more stuff to come out for it.
So. Sure. I can tell you one of the more interesting things that we're doing. If you look at open source technology in general, we look at, in fact, we introduced at last Linux World something very similar to our Linux reference architectures for HP UX, which we call open source reference architectures. And this is where we are actually integrating and supporting open source software, say like JBoss Application Server, on HP UX 11i. So we're giving customers a lot of flexibility. If there's a particular type of software, open source software that they want to run, and they are choosing to run it on Linux, on Unix, or on Windows, HP UX, for example, we allow them to do that. And we also have the support capabilities and services to help them support that environment. So we're embracing open source software across all of our different platforms, across all of our different operating system environments, including things like HP UX 11i, and including nonstop servers as well. Now, I'm more focused on Linux, so I don't know all the feature sets of HP UX 11i, but we certainly could, you know, get an expert to talk to you about some of those features on a follow-up call or something.
Fantastic.
One of the big things that we've been hearing past couple of months back and forth is HP's offering a Linux-based laptop, and then it's like, you know, people are saying it's really hard to find HP's Linux-based laptop. What's the case with that?
We did introduce a Linux pre-installed Linux notebook. And we were very excited about that. It was at one of the Linux Worlds in San Francisco. But my feeling is that it was a little bit ahead of its time. And customers just weren't ready to, the sales just didn't come through for us. Now, what we do today for customers that are looking to either install Linux on desktops or workstations or servers, and this is from laptops all the way up to Superdome servers, is we have an offering called HP Factory Express. And with this program, we can install Linux on any platform the way they want it installed. We can also install applications on top of that for them and then just deliver that to their work site. And it's a capability that we have that allows us to do this anywhere in the world. So we can do this installation and deliver it to a customer's location anywhere in the world.
Now, would that be me as a consumer would want a laptop with Linux on it? I can call up HP and get that?
It's probably not so much targeted to one-offs, but we do have the capability to do. It's just a little bit more expensive to do, single systems. But it's more targeted to customers that want to buy, 25 or more units that get pre-installed with an operating system or applications or a whole suite of things.
Now, one of the things we've heard over the past regarding consumer systems is that some of the cost of producing a consumer system is offset by the software manufacturers paying a little royalty or whatever it is to have their software pre-installed on the operating system or on the system, and hence that would be a reason for the higher cost of a Linux-based system because it wouldn't have that pre-installed software. Is that true?
Well, I can give you the example on the HP 5000 that we did offer for a while. And it actually, if you looked at the Novell Linux that we had installed in that system with OpenOffice, and you looked at a comparably equipped, the same notebook, same hardware, same features with Windows and Microsoft Office, there was about a $300 price differential. So I would argue that, you know, for like functionality, that you would actually end up with a lower cost product, not a higher cost product.
So then the HP one was about...
And in fact, that's true with some other things like our thin client that we talked about earlier.
So then the laptop that you did offer was about $300 cheaper than the comparable Microsoft-installed laptop.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's pretty significant when you're talking about a unit, a laptop that retailed at the time for about $1,100 with the Linux... with Linux installed on it from Novell.
So you guys should have waited about a year or so when I had enough money to buy one of those.
I was looking at HP laptops, and I would have got one if they had a Linux pre-install.
If it was pre-installed?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because we do have a number of our products. I think the only product that we don't certify with Linux today is a tablet PC, but all the other ones, you know, the 4000 series, 8000 series, all are supporting either Novell SUSE Linux, or the Novell Linux desktop, or the Red Hat desktop.
But you still, when you buy one of those, you still got to buy it with Windows XP or XP Home Edition.
Yes, that's true. I see where you're getting at.
Right. Yeah. Now,
we do have some, we're starting to offer some desktops with FreeDOS, which kind of lets you have the choice of installing Linux or something without having to pay a royalty for an operating system that you're not interested in. So you'll see that probably expand over time.
That's good. Now, HP, not just printers, not just computers, servers. You're still making some imaging products. Of course, we already have scanners, but like cameras. Are you still in? Is HP still making cameras?
Do we sell cameras? Is that the question?
Do you still make? Yeah, HP used to sell digital cameras.
Oh yes, yes we do.
Now, digital cameras. A lot of those function pretty well with Linux, and. Or they take flash cards, compact flash, which works pretty well with Linux. The U.S. Patent Office is now really looking at giving Microsoft their patent for the VFAT technology, and that looks like it might impact a lot of technology, particularly digital cameras, and the functionality of those devices on Linux. Do you see that as being a serious threat towards Linux, or even HP?
Yeah. I really don't have enough information on that to have an opinion, so I'm sorry I can't help you with that question, that particular question.
Fair enough. So what operating system do you use on a regular basis? Yeah.
I use Windows on a regular basis. I do have a laptop at work that I experiment with Novell Linux desktop that I use to connect into our network, connect to our Exchange server. It also helps me understand when I'm preparing a PowerPoint presentation what I need to do to make it more compatible with OpenOffice. So it is handy that way, but it's not the laptop I use on a daily basis.
So what is it about Linux that keeps you from using it for your desktop?
Me personally, the folks that I deal with on a day-to-day basis, whether that's inside or outside HP, are mostly using Microsoft Office products. So it's just a little bit easier for me to not have to go back and forth to adjust documents and things like that that may not convert 100%. So that's really the only reason. Otherwise, it doesn't really matter to me what the operating system is. From a home perspective, probably the thing that keeps me from using it would be a personal finance software. So that's the one thing I use at home that's pretty important to me that keeps me on a Windows operating system.
Now, is that QuickBooks or Quicken you're talking about?
I use Quicken.
Have you ever tried any of the Linux offerings like GNU Cash or My Money Dance? What is it, Money Dance or K My Money?
No, I haven't, and I haven't really tried those. So I've just sort of, all my information's already there, and that inertia thing that you have to overcome.
Right.
It's a very similar prospect that we have for other folks that look at the same types of things. But yeah, you raise a good point.
Now, are you?
I should look at that. I should look at that a little bit more closely on my Linux laptop at work.
There you go. Do you are you straight HP or do you do Compaq also?
I started my career at Compaq and I've been continuing it at HP.
So is HP doing some really great stuff on the Linux end? Is that extending over to the Compaq line also?
The consumer products, no. So for the commercial and the corporate products, yes. There's some sort of grassroots efforts to, support Linux on, like Presario computers and things like that. But it's more of a community effort and not one that we, formally undertake.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on tonight. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule
to
talk to us.
Sure, my pleasure. I really enjoyed talking with you guys as well. And
before we go,
hope you have a great evening. And I hope it was also useful to your audience as well.
I'm sure it is. Before we go, any plans, HP and Linux in the near future, the next year, that you could divulge for us? Any big things coming up?
Well, you'll look for us to be offering more. More components to our reference architectures, whether that's under the HP UX 11i or the Linux reference architectures. We're going to continue to augment that with more options for customers to have integration on. And, in the future, we'll continue to evaluate what applications may start making sense in that space as well.
We got a guy on our IRC chat who really, 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 really would like you to maybe push some buttons over there to get better Linux support for the PSC 1510. I guess it's a multifunctional device.
Was he not able to find that driver for that platform?
Let me double check there, because I was just over when we were talking on HP's open source site and listening for the PSC 15. Yeah, the 1510 isn't listed there.
Well, I'll have to go out there and look myself, but I thought we had pretty good coverage for all the multifunction printers as well. But that's the 1510?
Yes, it goes from 1400 to 1610.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe you can move that along for
him.
What
I'll do is I'll look that up myself, and I'll get back to you guys personally and let you know what I find out.
Oh, that's awesome. You're the greatest.
Okay.
I appreciate it, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
You guys are welcome.
Appreciate it. Great interview. Thank you.
You have a good week.
Thanks a lot.
Have a good one.
That was Jeff White from HP.
Yes, indeedy. Good interview. Seems to be a nice guy. He needs to use Linux a little bit more, but that's all right.
We'll let him go on that one.
We'll let him go on that one for now, and the next time we get him, well, we'll press him a little harder.
I was seriously considering getting an HP low-end laptop, 6 months ago. And, I blogged about it. I posted on my blog, the conversation I had with them. And it seemed they were completely clueless, the salespeople over there, about it. So I don't know.
Well, that prevails, I think, in every company at the moment now with their salespeople, you know?
Keep the keyboard on the computer,
Dan. But the laptops themselves, yeah, keep the keyboard. The laptops themselves are all right, though. Didn't you have that HP laptop that was your wife using it for a while, Dan?
Didn't have an HP laptop.
Wasn't that an HP laptop?
Gateway.
Gateway, that's
oh, no, no, no. The Frankenstein laptop.
Yeah, the Frankenstein.
Was a Dell.
It was, okay. Never mind then.
An old brick Dell.
What do you mean, old brick Dell?
I've known some people
brick
with some HP
Dell go together.
Laptop.
That's not totally true. Some of the newer Dells are actually small.
Nice little laptops.
Not any of the ones in this room.
You know what? Comparatively speaking, the smaller Dell laptops get, everybody else's are incredibly smaller than Dell's. Now, Link's got a little brick here.
Are they working?
No, they're not on mine, but I don't know if maybe I'd missing a codec or something like that. So.
Okay, it should be just DBX.
Really?
I think that's what it is. Let me see one.
I don't know. I might be, like I said, I might be missing a codec. Alan recorded some stuff off the DV for me. But now, listen, guys, I got to get going myself. I'm going to start packing it up now. But I'll take care of the IRC log and stuff like that. I have it running on a different machine than I can get all of. But to the rest of you who are listening to me anyway, good night, and I'll talk to you next week. And keep listening, because the other guy's still going to be here for a few minutes yet.
Now the real party starts.
I got to go to work.
Have fun.
Yeah.
What are you doing, installing Windows?
No, it's already pre-installed. I'm installing new computers. I just have to, like, hit enter at the EULA agreements and crap like that and set up the hardware. It sucks.
We bitch too much about Windows.
But it's justified. You know what I mean? That's
we complain about our jobs. Thing.
It's we complain about it too much, but it's justified.
We're a bunch of women, aren't we? Mm.
Something like that.
It's working. They're there, so...
Yeah, well, you know, that's the playful banter.
Shit happens.
Yeah, shit happens. Why install it? There's a logo for you. Shit happens. Why install it on your computer? I had a, you know...
They're there, so I...
They're working?
Yeah, give a holler if they don't. I'll
put them in my machine at work and see if I might be missing a DivX code.
The only
here.
Thing it's they screwed up when they started, said they were going to record from. They said 8 to 5 on the website, but of course they didn't start till 9 on it, and they are missing one episode in there.
Oh, bastards.
They like dropped one off in the middle, so I'm not sure if my numbering convention is correct, because of course they don't tell you what the name of any programs are at the beginning. So I'm just going by what the TV said it was.
So, Link, when can we expect your review of the Neuros recorder?
As soon as I get time enough to do it. I mean, like I said, my whole intention was to do it. Am I still on my mic? My whole intention was to do it, like, over the weekend and play with it and have a lot of fun. However, I got horribly, horribly sick, myself and my entire family. So, you know, there just was not enough time to... play with that in between puking. So, plans again to do that this weekend, I think. And
I think it's going to be my turn to be sick this weekend.
Because I feel good. Well, you can have what I had. I don't want it back. Please don't pass it around again.
I think I'm going to give it to Alan next.
No, you'll do that on my own. Don't worry.
The sickness is going around these days. Everybody's getting sick. It's just crazy weather, man. Like, one day it's 20 degrees, the next day it's like 55.
Well, it's actually very nice out there right now.
Awesome.
I had to run out to the car to get the DVDs for Link. It's actually pretty nice out there.
You know, this past weekend, I had to fix some computers for some people. And, you know, I don't want to belabor the Microsoft thing, but what was really annoying was, you know, I wanted to make sure that they're compliant with license, and they... didn't have a valid license for XP. They're buying some, but I couldn't install XP. So the only thing they had was Windows ME. So
that's worse, man.
That was like it turned into a 6-hour install because you know, I got to give credit where credit was due. When this thing would boot up, it would boot up really fast. But it was what was it? Not Asus. What was the motherboard? SIS chipset. And it was this funky chipset that was not listed anywhere on SIS's website. So when I go there to download the drivers, because of course, I mean, the drivers already existed for Windows 98. This thing's about, what, 4 or 5 years old, this system. So they already had the drivers for Windows 98. You'd think they might have included them in ME, but of course they didn't. So I track down the drivers. I download what I thought was the right thing, because I'd boot up in a damn small Linux, which runs perfectly. And I do LSPCI and look at the chipsets and the different cards and the model numbers. And I go over to the SIS site and I download the drivers, which I think were the right ones, but of course they weren't. The only thing that worked off of their website right off the bat was the Ethernet drivers. And then the audio drivers would not work, not at all. The video drivers, they actually... The one I thought the model was, wasn't the right driver. So there was only two choices, so I got the right driver eventually. But the sound was a pain in the butt. I had to actually go out looking all over the web for some kind of reference drivers that some third party had put out. And I downloaded those, and then it worked. Then I spent the next 4 hours trying to get the USB to work properly. And I went all over the place, because it said the device wasn't being recognized. I couldn't find the driver. It would load the three... There was four USB ports on there. It would load three of them. The fourth one would not work. And then, ergo, none of the USB ports would work for some reason. So I went all over the place, tried all these wacky things, and eventually somebody on the Infonomicon forums had said, hey, are you sure the USBs, the ports aren't faulty? And I booted into Linux and found out, yeah, they were faulty, but they were coming up looking as if they weren't. So it was a little frustrating there, going through that whole process. And what was neat, though, is there was no FireWire on this device. And I like to... I have a couple of FireWire drives, which are large capacity, and I use to transfer a lot of files off of. So if I'm going to wipe out somebody's system, I'll back up onto a FireWire device using damn small Linux or an OpEx. But I didn't have one. And I wasn't interested in pulling the hard drive out and sticking it into one of my existing systems. And the amount of data I was coming off of there with was a little too much to be able to fit on my USB flash device.
The laptop bag has no laptop in it, and it weighs about 50 pounds.
So I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to take it out, and I didn't want to split the files up. I could have secured copied them over, but that would have been a pain in the butt. I couldn't tar them up and do that in a one big file because it was NTFS. File system, and I didn't want to go through the hassle of using captive NTFS and doing all that. So I just set up a quick Samba share, and man, that worked perfectly for my main thing, and just copied it all over. And
just pointing it to your external drive?
I just pointed to the... I shared out one of my drives with Samba.
Oh, okay.
And at that point, I mounted it under Nopix and copied the stuff over, because it was... their OS was unbootable. And when I was finished, I installed the ME, and then I just transferred the files back through the Explorer. Worked perfectly.
Linux saved the day once again.
Oh, of course it does. And you know, and speaking of large capacity FireWire devices, or USB devices, my boss purchased a Lacy. I think it was 160 gig.
A lovely little Lacy thing.
Yeah, 160 gig. drive from a local Apple shop.
Oh, cool.
And she wanted to back up stuff on her iBook and on her Windows PC. So when she got home, she plugged it right into her iBook, transferred her files over, and then she plugged it into the Windows machine. And, of course, while the Windows machine recognized the device was plugged in, would not mount the drive at all. And I theorized, because she called me about it last night, that it was because being purchased from an Apple shop, it was obviously formatted with HFS Plus, which Windows cannot read HFS Plus.
Yeah,
and to make matters, you know, a little more complicated, she could have formatted it. They recommend if you're using Windows to format it with NTFS, but if she had done that, that's not readable by OS X.
I was going to say, then the Mac doesn't read it.
Right, so it puts you kind of in a little catch-22.
Speaking of Macs, you know, since we bash all the time on Microsoft, I think we need to do a little Apple bashing, too.
We'll get to that in a few minutes. And so what choice do you have? Like, Linux can read and write to either either file system. Typically, I'll format my large capacity devices in either, if I'm going to use them under OS X, I might format them in either EXT2 or 3 because I can read EXT with the SourceForge drivers on OS X, or I'll do them in HFS Plus because I can read and write the HFS Plus in Linux.
Take it easy.
Take it easy, Link. And then on the Windows side, you know, you can't read either one of those natively, which is very annoying. But in her case, thought about you can format it with FAT32, but isn't there a limitation that I think Windows will only allow you to format a FAT32 external device up to, what, 2 or 4 gigs?
Yeah, those numbers sound familiar. I think 4 now, but I'm not totally, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous to format 160 gig drive in the FAT32 file system and have what you would have to have 40 partitions if you did the whole drive. So I thought, well, maybe what she could do is format the drive half HFS Plus, half NTFS, and if she wanted to, a third one of FAT32 for like what 2 or 4 gigs, whatever the size is, so you can share files between the two. Although when you're sharing it, you know, you can't copy. If you're in Windows, you can't copy from the HFS Plus to the FAT32.
Okay.
Yeah. So. But it's annoying. It's a little hurdle. And now with...
Kent says 2 gigs for FAT32.
Yeah, I thought it was 2 gigs. So now with the fact that...
You can have NTFS, right, support, but you have to pay for it. There's a company that has...
For OS X?
No, for Linux.
Well, you can do it without paying for it.
Yeah, it's stable.
I've used the captive NTFS. Works pretty well. I think there's...
You don't corrupt the drive, you know, file system?
I didn't. But, you know, there's always a risk of that happening.
How big of files were you using? Were they big ones, or were they just regular-sized files?
Like, what do you mean big? Like,
a couple gig?
Well, no, I didn't really... No. Couple of gig? No. I don't know. I'd be leery about using it, though, because I know it's very fragile and easy to break. But now, Pat, you want to talk about Apple. You got a hard-on for Apple this week.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I see all these fanboys bending over backwards and pulling their pants down by their ankles for Uncle Steve. I don't know. It kind of gets my blood to boil a little bit. You know, I mean, they announced...
You're taking things way too seriously, I think.
I don't know, man. They announced, you know, they're coming out with the new Apple laptops on Intel architecture. I think it's a good thing, you know. All those PP machines that they were espousing, you know, a couple of years ago is kicking the crap out of x86 are now worthless, so... Hopefully the prices will drop and we'll be able to get them a nice G5 for, you know, a few hundred dollars and install a real 64-bit operating system on it. Get that OS, you know, 10 stuff off of it. I don't know. Looking at the specs, I think the prices are still high. I don't know. And then I hear that there are Asus machines under the covers. Now, I posted a link to this manufacturer where you can get no OS Asus boxes, and some of them look a lot like that Apple box, and they're a lot cheaper.
But they don't have the Apple stamp of approval.
And they don't have the DRM, you know, burned into the frickin' processor.
Well, did either of you watch the keynote, Bill Gates' keynote speech at CES? No, I did. What about you there, Lipton Iced Tea Man?
Lipton? No. I'm sorry, tonight's...
Fiji. It's always Fiji.
Fiji. Whatever. From the islands of Fiji.
Yeah. I have not seen Steve Jobs' keynote. Well, I guess that was at what? What was it?
Macworld.
I have not. I wanted to watch that today, but I just had absolutely no time to do that. I did watch the Microsoft CES, and as I watched this, I mean...
You were watching because you wanted to see Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, that's it. Their vision for the future really looks interesting. And again, I mentioned this to Jeff when we had spoken to it, that the buzzword these days And one of the big buzzwords in combating Linux adoption is integration, interoperability integration. Microsoft is, CES was all about integration. Seamless integration from when you get up in the morning to clicking, pressing that panel computer and seeing the news to having that news feed transferred right to your mobile device, your mobile phone. As you're going out the door, it warns you of the
rebooting
path you're
it every
take.
Time in between.
Just going all the way from there to the airport where you put your mobile phone down and it brings up a Windows desktop with your email and everything on there because you authenticate through a biometrics thumb implant or a thumb fingerprint. And then you move off, you know, to all sorts of different things, and eventually it all comes back to the final big thing was the Xbox being the home, the center of the multimedia entertainment system, whereas you'll be able to get your movies on your Windows machine, download them from Netflix, whatever, and seamlessly send them over to the Xbox 360 and do all sorts of other stuff. Now, as I watched this, I said that, you know, that is a fantastic vision. And I know that Apple had, you know, some pretty good things to say. I haven't listened to them. And I thought more about this, and I said, here's the problem. I thought about this on the way into work today. See, Microsoft is not going to be the one that's going to be able to deliver that level of integration, that level of interoperability, because they might have the vision, but their products really are not stable enough to deliver that. It will work together supposedly seamlessly, and if you use a complete Microsoft platform, it might function fairly well, but there's going to be so many security issues, there's going to be so many glitches, so many bugs, it's just never going to probably get off the ground as, you know, the way they like it to be, like it to happen. Now, on the opposite end of the stream, you have Apple, and I think Apple will be able to get a significant portion of that integration available, that interoperability and integration, but on a smaller scale. I don't think they're going to have the expansive reach that Microsoft is going to have to take it into all the different areas, because Microsoft's going to be, you know, blocking the way. That's what's going to happen, because Apple just doesn't have the marketplace to be able to take it that far. But the products they do have are going to work and work pretty well, yeah, and be very, you know, not as configurable. Now, on the Linux side of things, I think you're going to have a mixture of the two. You'll probably have
Mr. Home.
You're probably going to have the stability. Well, you're going to have a lot of stability, I think, but the problem is you're going to have to build it by scratch. I mean, you're going to have to piece it together yourself, and it is going to be a lot of work. Like Myth TV, for example. Yeah. It's a great product. Now, you see, like, Apple's coming out with something similar to it, Microsoft with Xbox 360 with their home entertainment center version of Vista, and I think XP has one, really trying to provide that capability. Whereas not Myth has been there for so long, is really stable, works really well, is really expansive, extremely flexible.
Once you get it set up.
Right, yeah. But then you got to get it set up.
The whole thing with Myth TV wasn't so much the actual Myth TV application. To me, the hardest part was getting the drivers for the video card, for the video capture card, to load up properly and to initialize and to make sure everything was working correctly. To me, that was the hardest part of it.
Right, and it's a building it yourself type of deal, which, you know, that's the hard part right there, where Microsoft and Apple take that away, but with Apple, you're paying a lot more price. I really don't believe it's as expansive as it is as Microsoft can be, because Microsoft has a lot more clout. But then again, on the Microsoft end of things, their vision never matches the reality, as we all know.
Yeah, they release a shitload of products that never do anything. You know, the whole, you remember they had like the whole internet thin client deal for people who really didn't want to learn computers? That like completely bombed.
Was that Web TV?
Maybe. They had another one too.
Web TV was what they bought.
Yeah,
yeah.
They had a couple different products like that. And then they had the whole, the whole Windows Media Edition. You know, that really hasn't really gained much traction. It's not really done much, you know?
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't know if the
I had a friend who had Web TV, and one of the biggest problems was with it. Once you bought it, you couldn't upgrade it at all. So, you know, as new technologies came out, you know, even something as simple as Flash, when the latest version of Flash came out and all the websites started to use it, you couldn't go to a Flash website on it because you couldn't upgrade your machine.
Well, isn't TiVo kind of like that, though, too? But, I mean,
TiVo's
the technology...
Always pushing, TiVo's always pushing its stuff out, though.
Right. But
Although, if you have a Series 1, I don't think you get updates anymore.
Right.
No. You don't get the newest updates, as I say. I think you get stuck at version 3, I think.
Right. So, I mean, there's... And the thing, you know, there's a lot of... Another big buzz that's going around, it seems to be, is a lot of people complaining about companies jumping on the open source bandwagon, taking advantage of the open source development,
sure,
and
leveraging the source code, so
right, not
that
contributing
does
back to the community.
80% of the work for them to start a project, and they just customize it to suit their own needs, slap their own brand on it, and there you go.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of feel the same thing. You know, when I heard about that whole TiVo to Go thing, where it does not work at all with Linux, and I guess Google's product line, they just released the Google Pack, which is a nice collection of software for Windows, even though a lot of those applications, you know, the non-Google applications are available for Linux, but you know, we're still waiting for Google Earth, we're still waiting for Google Talk.
I'm trying to get Chris DeBonner to come on. He works at Google.
Right, and it'd be nice
and
if
he's an old Linux guy. He used to be on the Screensavers.
It right.
would show very so often as the Linux guy, you know, before Marcel was on there.
I have not listened. I have never seen an episode of the Screensavers.
I burned you a copy of the best of, don't you remember?
Right, yeah, but I mean the recent ones.
Oh, the recent ones? Well, it's not the Screensavers anymore.
Right.
They changed it on G4. It's called Attack of the Show, and it's a completely different show. The show that's back on G4 is Call for Help with Leo Laporte. And that's produced up in Toronto now.
What? I don't know. The whole.
I don't know. It just kind of makes me sick. You know, just gushing. Oh, I can't wait to go spend my $2,000 this weekend.
Yeah. Well, I really wonder how much of the Microsoft display was just like pre-scripted. Fancy graphics, or if any of that technology is
functional,
actually
yeah.
existing, and
it's just a bunch of dummy stuff.
Testing it.
Well, yeah, this stuff can be done, but most of that stuff is still just, you know, it's research products still. It's not mass produced,
right? So you know, and I'm wondering where is like the non Microsoft technology and all that? Is that if you're not running? If you're running Linux, are you totally out of the picture?
You're out of the picture.
Pretty much, yeah.
In their version, yeah, you're out of the picture.
Because, I mean, you look at it, and it's pervasive through all this type of technology, the cell phone, the media player, the home entertainment center, and the PC, and just, you know, day-to-day electronic devices are all running some sort of Windows. Whereas what you're seeing here today is... you know, we got a lot of companies, especially embedded that use embedded devices, moving towards using a Linux embedded operating system. Is the PlayStation Portable, was that based off of Linux? I think, or is it PlayStation 3 that might have a Linux
core? Well, yeah, the PlayStations do, but I don't think the PlayStation Portable is.
The new Linux journal that showed up on my doorstep 2 days ago.
It's all about
embedded
devices.
Did you read that about the Nokia tablet?
The Nokia device.
That looks pretty cool, man.
Now, I'm not sure. I heard Palm's next OS was going to be based on Linux, or it's been written on top of Linux.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't followed Palm stuff in quite a while.
But I haven't been keeping following. But when I saw the CES thing, they had said that the Palm device would seamlessly integrate with all this stuff. And I'm thinking, I thought they were running on Linux. And if that's the case, how's that going to operate? So, I thought I had heard on Lug Radio that the G3 or the P3.
Well, it must have shot a picture just as you were unplugging it.
No, it didn't. I did. I mean, I'm leaving it unplugged for a little while because for some reason I'm getting distorted images.
Superior Apple product.
Yeah. Well,
I guess you haven't got your new toy yet, Dan.
It shipped on Monday. I'm kind of glad it didn't show up so far because it would never give me a chance to do some of this other stuff. I want to get out of the way. But next week I should definitely have a review on it and see how it actually goes.
All the Neuro stuff is based on Linux, I've been reading.
All right, and I wonder what's going to happen with Neuros, if that, you know, what's the deal with Neuros if that patent go through for VFAT? Because if I'm not mistaken, isn't the cards that you use in the Neuros device usually, does it? What format does it accept?
It's Flash. Just regular Flash.
Well, Flash is formatted for
a FAT32, right?
What's it formatted in?
Like, for my camera, I have SansDisk. It's FAT32.
Right, yeah. But that would be violating the patent.
Yeah.
So or they'd have to pay 25 cents, but then, in that case, how would you be able to use it under Linux?
They'd move officially to China and not pay.
39 megapixel digicam.
That's what they would do. Because he has a whole bunch of operations in China. You know, the Chinese don't give a shit. They do what the hell they want to do, you know?
Right, but, you know, we don't live in China, so... You know, part of the problem is if you want to stay legal. And again, it comes down to it's making it difficult for people to use technology or people like us who use it legally. And Joe Schmo on the street doesn't give a damn.
No, he doesn't.
He goes out. He doesn't realize what's going on. He doesn't know that, you know, that, oh, there's a rootkit in the Sony CDs that can infect your system. That's just another day for those people. You know, oh, my computer's not working right.
It's running a little slower today.
Yeah, it's just running slow. Something's going funky. But,
time to reboot.
Yeah, time to reinstall the OS. And here it is, their audio CD. They're not just coming through the internet anymore or through the mail. It's coming in the audio CD you listen to. You know, he chucks that CD in there and rips it off.
Virusware.
He rips it off through iTunes and puts it on his iPod. He doesn't give a damn.
He goes on, he buys another second and third copy of the songs he already bought.
Right. You know, it's funny because there's like two attitudes with all this when you start talking about it. Like people go and use it, and, you know, some people have the attitude that, oh, it's the price of doing business. Other people have the attitude, I can't believe it costs so much to do this. Why are they taking our money? But they don't want to go to anything else. They're just like, we got to suck it up and do it. Got to suck it up. Right, Alan?
True.
You guys hear about the Apple iTunes mini store thing, collecting the data? I posted on the forum about it.
Once you close
that mini viewer on it, it stops doing that. And it only does it on the first song you click on.
You apologist, Alan?
No, I just happened to read about.
You're an Apple apologist.
I just happened to read about that. You get all hyper about the wrong things, but.
But who is it? Who has there's a company out there that's producing a really cheap Linux desktop.
The new company with that partnered with Linspire, was it Kudix or something like that?
Kubu?
Kudix or something like that?
What was that on?
Hold on. If you go to the Linspire page, you could find it.
I looked at that. It was like I think starting at like $299.
It's cheap. It's real cheap.
And I said to myself, you know, I know we were talking about buying the kids one of those Walmart.
There's a 200 one from Tiger Direct. It's a Linspire box.
Right. We were talking about buying one of those New Balance with Linspire pre-installed for the kids. But then, one of the problems we have with giving them a laptop is it's easy.
Destroy it.
Easier for them to destroy it. So we figured, you know, if we just buy one of those.
Kubox, $299.
Right. Kubox PCs, throw it down there in a corner on a desk. I mean, that way they can do all the stuff they want to do, which they can't do on the OS 10 box down there, or under PPC Linux, because Flash doesn't really run well. Of course, you know, maybe the GASH. Is that what it's called, GASH? The upcoming GPL version of Flash? Well,
yeah,
anyway.
GASH.
Anyway, and they always want to monopolize the wife's computer, and which she wants to use her computer too. So we thought about maybe getting one of those. Do they include a monitor for that price, or is a monitor separate?
It's extra.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's always extra. But Tiger Direct also has a Linspire box for like $199.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little underpowered, but it's a low-end box, you know?
What are you going to do?
It's an option, you know?
An option for Alan. Options for Alan. What do you think, Alan? How's that PSP?
I'm enjoying it. You were playing around with it before. Takes nice, shows movies very nicely. You can get RSS feeds off of it. Works nice.
Yeah, the browser was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's limited. It tends to run out of memory after a while. Like if you get something with a lot of pictures on it, it doesn't release memory very good. So, I mean, it's a limited browser, but it's good enough. I mean, it picks up the page here very well. Yeah, and you get the, you know, CNN, you can get those type of things on there. It just, if it has any weird, you know, JavaScripts or anything on there, it tends to hang, but not that bad.
Is that JavaScripts as in plural?
As in who?
JavaScripts as in plural. Is anybody running Firefox 1.5?
I am on my laptop there.
How you liking it?
It's okay. It's fine.
Easy to work. Works real nice.
Yeah, at work I have it too on Windows.
I've been too lazy to load it on the one here.
I had that one little issue, but that was really an Arch package issue.
What do you have on it? What do you mean a package issue? I talked about it last week. I thought you were currently having...
No, no, it's working fine now.
It's my turn to start packing up, so...
I don't know. I got to put together that DVD yet.
Got to get that done so you can get Ubuntu off your box, finally.
Yeah, that's it, huh?
Switch to Arch, man.
You know, I could probably just rip Ubuntu off my box now and put Arch on there.
Hey, we're going to be talking to Judd in February. Originally, I had him listed for the 25th. But he emailed me and asked him to switch him to February, so we're going to talk to him in about a month.
Yeah, and if you don't know, there's a calendar now on the website.
Yes. You can go on the main page and you see the link. So you'll know who our guests are. As I book them, I'll put them on there. They may change.
Book them, Dano.
Week to week if somebody has to switch or things come up. So it's not set in stone, but at least you'll have an idea who's coming up.
Is there a Thunderbird 1.5 already?
I think so.
Really? I thought they were still at 1.07.
I think they upgraded.
Alan, go find out. Oh, you're closing now.
How about I do some shout-outs before we close out?
Yeah, go ahead and do some shout-outs.
All right, we got Brad Overstreet from Brunswick, Georgia. Anthony Sinatra from West Covina, California.
Sinatra.
Ash from Dover, England. Rob C. from Chatham, England. David Gardner from Southlake, Texas. Maddie from Helsinki, Finland. Barry from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Well, these are all new people?
Yeah, these are all new people.
How many people we have on that for Upper
Man? 351.
Ah, it's going up day by day.
Rob Payne from Adelaide, South Australia. Rick Timmis from Exeter, England. Sho CM from Poway, California. Ben Gordon from Kristinehamn, Värmland, Sweden. Briano from Saltash, England. Luminari from Toronto, Ontario, in Canada, of course. Chumpbender from Vista, California. Scott from Anoka, Minnesota. And we got Steve Riley from Plano, Texas. Mark from Fall River, Massachusetts. And Mark from Portland, Oregon. Rock on.
Woo!
So next week we're going to have Matt Mullenweg, the creator of WordPress. Great piece of software. Should be a good interview.
You're using WordPress.
Yeah, I am. I have to upgrade to 2.0. I haven't done it yet. But I like WordPress. It's a real nice application. Once you get it running, works. It's real easy. Interface is really easy to use. Real simple. Going through the browser, you know, post, add posts, edit them. Real nice.
I hacked. I did some of those hacks for B-Blog. To decrease spam by word checking, and it's helped that in conjunction with the ban list in conjunction with my
script. I have to look at that because I keep getting stuff. You know, I put on no post, I still keep getting stuff.
Yeah, that's a problem. It's a problem with the trackback. I think it is what they said that it comes through on the trackback. So they have recommended just deleting the trackback file or renaming it because you don't really need it. But a lot of stuff comes in through the trackback, even though you've disabled post. Something funky like that. They're working on fixing that all up in the next version.
Oh, I wanted to mention, I'm going to give VM Player a whirl. Have you looked at that stuff at all, Dan?
I used to run VMware for a while, but...
Well, VM Player is free. The thing with a VM Player is that you have to have a pre-image.
Right.
You can't just install another OS.
Was that in that was in the latest Linux magazine where they had talked about getting a trial version of VMware, installing what you wanted to install, and then
yeah, that's probably what I'm going to do. Create a Windows image of the software I need for work and stuff, and just have the image.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. What are you going to run it on?
Well, I'm going to run it on the laptop here for work. So.
And that's running Arch, right?
This is running Arch. So I downloaded everything. I haven't installed it yet. I pulled down a couple images just to try it out. I downloaded they call it the web appliance. It's like a thin version of Ubuntu, which is just a web browser. And I also downloaded Debian and I think SUSE. The images are small. They're only like, 300 meg, 250 meg. So I'm curious to see if that's the same size if you create the image yourself.
Of what? Windows?
Yeah, of Windows. I'm curious how big it's going to be. At least a gig, I would imagine, right?
Larger than you want to know.
See, I thought in the day, I thought you had to. You told VMware how much space you wanted to reserve on a minimum, and I thought that would be the size of the.
But that's the full blown install. I'm talking about once you have, say, you have one machine with VMware working the workstation, you create, say, an image. Good night, Alan. You create an image of say Windows. Right, you then import that image over to another machine with just has VM player, and you just use Windows with the VM player. Now there is a hack. I posted it on the bulletin board today that Dan Dennedy had mentioned that you can use ISO images, a way of tricking VM player to let you do different ISO images of different operating systems. So it's a bit of a hack, but that's another option too. So I'm going to be playing around with it this weekend, maybe next week, and maybe I'll bring it up next week as well.
All right, cool. Oh, crap, we're coming off of BinRev, and I wanted to mention something.
About?
I got to cut off of BinRev. I got an email. I don't know if it came into the tech show originally, but I got an email from... I'm looking in the wrong emails. From... Love sockets filled with big, thick. Philip Hasten Ritter, probably butchered his name. He had emailed us about the iRiver T30 device he got, I believe, for the holidays. He originally had a problem because this device does not mount, or you cannot use the IFP line client to transfer files back and forth, nor will it mount as a USB mass storage device. I think it's one of iRiver's newer products that it works specifically in conjunction with Windows Media Player 10 for transferring files back and forth. So it's an interesting product, and I know how we're always touting iRiver as being pretty Linux friendly, but this device really isn't as friendly as the other devices, particularly because it requires, Windows Media Player.
The iAudio, you just mount it like a thumb drive.
Right. Now, there is a workaround. You could actually get this device to run using Gphoto, I think it is. You can transfer files back and forth. What did I say? Apparently, the iRiver tried to make this device only compatible with Windows Media Player 10, which in my book really deals a blow, I guess, recommending. Web page, and I'll post it to the notes, the chat, talks about how to get this device working under Linux, since it only supports the media transfer protocol, and it plays Vorbis files too, obviously, for some reason. It requires, if you use Gphoto 2 and doing some hacking, that you can actually get the ability to transfer files back and forth. Pretty, funky. And it's a shame that, iRiver has chosen to go down that route. Unfortunately. Industry huh? Industry pressure? Maybe it is. Maybe we're going to see more of that. Probably not from iAudio. Hopefully not. Not from Neuros Audio. And it's time to move off to Canada or...
I'm trying to figure out how you come up with enough money for that 442 they got.
Yeah, that's nice. But I think we're going to close it up. It's been a long show. Pat's tired.
I'm not.
I'm tired.
We're going to wrap it up.
I still got a ton of post-production to do. Let us know if you're getting the what is it? The high, yeah, the AUG, the high bitrate AUG. Send us some feedback on that. Pat? What?
I heard. It was pretty good.
See, my plan is this show I'm going to listen to on my GP2X, which should be here tomorrow. So I only have one more file on my iPod, which is a newsreel, last newsreel. I'm not sure. I might transfer a couple files so I can listen to them at work tomorrow. I'm expecting a GP2X, but I think the first show I'm going to listen to on the GP2X is going to be this one. First thing I'm going to listen to. Or I could listen to the GNU Linux user show. No, I can't. That's terrible. Not funny. That's a shame. That is a shame.
Live and learn, man.
Yes. And you're out of here, Pat?
Yeah, I'm taking off.
No, I mean Alan. Yeah.
Good night.
Take it easy. Let me play out the music. Have a good week, Alan. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Food.
Good night.
Food. I have not eaten for days.
And who says you will?
Give me food so I have strength when the wolves come. Let me die not in hunger, but in combat.
Who are you?
I am Subutai.
Thief.
An archer.
I'm Arcanian.
I am Arcanian. The great order of Kerlet.
So what are you doing here?
Dinner for
wolves. Dinner for wolves.
Oh, sorry. But this little fishy needs his growing too.
You know I'm going to tap that ass, right? So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
Yeah. What?
Dinner for wolves.
Yep. Maybe I should just bag it and go to bed early and get up early and try and encode the show before work tomorrow. That never works. Oh, yeah, I need a red hot mama. Yeah.
So did you see the postings over at the web right now?
Yeah. I didn't. I just read the first couple. There should be no beeping in this show. Those beepings aren't from error messages. They're usually from tab completion. Because usually when I do tab completion, that's not going to do
you
it.
You beat your kids this week, so hopefully they're
behaving better. Yeah, beat my kids this week. Yeah. We got a twat coming up we got to prepare
yes.
for.
Well, maybe you should do the video for them.
Yeah, maybe I should. That'd be a good preparation.
I'm working on another video. My son, I've been doing his videos. You know, I must have freaking 15 videos that I gotta go through. I've done like 4 or 5 of them. Yeah, pretty good, Keenan. I have the new version. It's in March. 0.8.
Huh?
Keenan, the lighter version of Keenan.
What is
it? 0.8.
It's the lighter version?
It's the last version. Just came out recently.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Huh.
It's an arch.
Is it really good?
It's, you know, it's newer. It's probably a little more stable. It's similar to what he had.
Huh. I gotta look forward to trying it out. Let me stop this recording. Pat was just a little lower than everybody else.
A little bit.
I was going to say, it sounds like all of a sudden we went like nasally. Or is it just me?
What are you saying? You're nasally? I might be nasally. I've been sick, so.
No, we'll hear how it sounds once the camera off. Starts.
I just shut the camera off. We'll
back
see.
To the drawing board, Dan.
We'll see what it does, if I can start it back up again and if it'll cool
you
down.
You want to use your other camera for a show or something? Or I don't know.
Well, that's going to be a pain in the butt because we're going to have to sit there and turn it on and off all night long.
Why? Just put a tape in it.
Do you see this picture?
I don't have enough tape.
Wally did of me holding an apple.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's pretty funny.
Well, let's see if it'll...
Life in Ohio. That was the guy to send us the...
Joel.
Joel.
Yeah,
Joel.
Work on.
Yeah, we should send him a promo.
Oh, don't want to do that.
Looks like John just jumped in.
Bitch about that.
Don't want to do what?
That whole beeping noise.
Alright, I'll take the camera offline for a few minutes. I'll let it run for like 5-6 minutes, take it off. And
anybody remember how to start marking a area in Vi?
No.
Me either.
Isn't it shift?